fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Go ahead. Poke the Blair.
Poke the Blair.
This is the Jeff Blair Show. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Baseball Central's just around the corner. Well, it's actually an hour away with yours truly and Kevin Barker. Chris Colabella, the American League RBI leader. Yeah, good luck with you at him in your fantasy league. Right fielder with the Minnesota Twins. He's scheduled to join us at 11:40. Got a lot to talk about. Joey Votto rediscovering his power stroke. Brandon Morrow rediscovering his inner... whatever. And we got lots of stuff. Got some cold weather stories. Going to talk a little R.A. Dickey and his knuckleball. The Blue Jays 9-3 winners over the Minnesota Twins last night in a balaclava type of game. Everybody was wearing balaclavas. And kind of true with everybody wearing the number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson and guys covering their faces up. It was kind of a little hard to determine whom exactly was whom. Good stuff out of the game for the Jays. Jose Bautista continues to hit the snot net out of the ball in that ballpark. Same for Edwin Encarnacion. Brett Laurie looked really good, made another play in the field. And John Gibbons played bullpen jeopardy and won. Forced into it by Brandon Morrow. But I guess as far as the Jays go, some elements of concern. Obviously, Brandon Morrow's performance. Adam Lind's tight back. But here's the thing with the Blue Jays. Jose Reyes is expected to join the team on Friday in Cleveland. Casey Jansen's not far behind. Colby Rasmus didn't play yesterday because of a hamstring issue. So this team appears to be getting back to health at the same time that a lot of teams in the American League East are going through a lot of issues. Now, I'm not looking too far down the road, but I am telling you this. There were two things that we all said, I think we all agreed, needed to happen for the Blue Jays to play significant baseball in September. One, they had to get out of April with a decent record. And two, they had to hope that everybody else around in the American League stayed bunched together with them. That is the case so far. And almost every team in the American League East has got significant injury concerns. So the Jays, at the very least, are upholding their end of the bargain. Jerry Howarth is the radio voice of the Blue Jays. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jerry, thanks so much for doing this. And before we talk about yesterday's game, a weather report, what are the chances of the game being played today? I know there's a winter storm watch in effect for the north of Minneapolis, although I live out there in that neck of the woods, and I can tell you the winter storm warnings usually stay in effect until Labor Day. But what's the weather forecast for tonight?
Well, last night on the bus, Ron Sandelli, who's in charge of security with the ball club, he told everybody the game could be called as early as noon, so be ready, and everybody would be in touch with you regarding this game. But looking out this morning here, it's dry, it's clean, and there's a little pale blue sky overhead, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen, although the team is prepared to have this canceled and then play a day-night doubleheader tomorrow. But I think right now, looking at the weather, this looks pretty good to go ahead and play tonight. Now, a lot can happen, as you said, in the next 2 or 3 hours, and time will tell. But so far, so good.
I would imagine that for some players, the way they were hitting last night, they wouldn't mind it if this game gets going at a regular time.
No, I think you're right. 20 runs and 31 hits over the last two games, pounding Baltimore and then the Twins here last night. And I enjoyed your commentary before I came on here because, remember, the Blue Jays already have won more games this month than they won all of last May when they were 7 and 17, I beg your pardon, and here they are now already 8-6.
And Jerry, we talked about this going back in spring training. We talked about it before the opener. You and Joe have mentioned it. Pat and Buck have talked about it. This team is playing a different type of baseball in this first month of April. And I watched that team last night. We saw the Twins. The Twins are a pretty good fielding team. They had some problems with the cold weather. The Jays, I'm telling you, I've been saying this for a couple of days. I'm beginning to think, Jerry, that defense might be the strength of this team. It might be, other than the bullpen, the strength of this team.
Well, I think you're right. And look at Brett Laurie. He made two stunning plays yesterday to help Brandon Marr early on. And then he made another play later in the game, hit a grand slam to top it off there in the ninth inning. His defense has been superb. Munenori Kawasaki made a great play at second. Ryan Goins has made plays at second and short. Jonathan Diaz as well. So overall, that kind of defense helps out, whether you're getting 6 1/3 scoreless innings from someone like Dustin McGowan, or from Brandon Morrow last night, who I saw him after the game. He said it was just so cold, I couldn't get a feel for the ball, for the slider. That's what you need, and Brandon didn't have it and gives up only 2 runs over 3 2/3 innings because of that defense.
You know, Jerry, I was surprised last night, and Greg Zahn made this point on Blue Jay Central. Knowing what the weather is, I was a little surprised when I saw, or what the weather was, I should say. I was a little surprised when I saw that it appears as if early in the season, Brandon Morrow isn't relying on his fastball as much as he has in the past. And Greg was making the point yesterday or last night. It was a perfect example. Cold weather, sometimes the field pitches don't work. Go with the fastball. And, it was a criticism of some of the pitch selection employed by the Blue Jays. Now, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus here, Jerry, but were you surprised by that as well? Because it did seem at times as if, I don't know if Brandon was reluctant to throw the fastball, but it seemed to me a couple of times as if he went with a second option.
Well, in my opinion, last night was one of those games for Brandon especially, you have to put off to the side and then move on. And it's hard to break it down because not only was it hard for him to get a field pitch, but command his fastball, too. And I thought he threw a number of fastballs, but when they weren't hitting the zone where he wanted and not spotting that, then he resorted to other pitches. They weren't there either. And it's not like him to throw 98 pitches and just a few more strikes and balls over 3 2/3 innings. So I don't think that was the issue. I thought he threw his fastball, but he just didn't know where it was going.
Jerry Howarth joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jose Reyes is expected to join the team on Friday in Cleveland. Now, we don't know about Adam Lind yet, so we don't know if his back injury will require any time in the DL or anything like that. But I want to focus on Jose Reyes in particular. What do you think the Jays do, Jerry, with Jose Reyes coming back? They've got Munenori Kawasaki, Ryan Goins, and Jonathan Diaz. I know John Gibbons told the writers yesterday that he thinks Jonathan Diaz could play in the outfield if he absolutely needed to in a pinch. What do you think the Jays do here? I mean, I can't see them sending down Diaz, can you?
No, good question. And Munenori is so valuable when he comes up, but that's the value of a franchise and an organization that has depth in the minor leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, in talking to Adam Lind after the game yesterday, I'd be surprised if he doesn't go on the disabled list because he was in such agony and pain, and those back issues are not easy. And then you're asked to swing the bat, put torque on your follow-through, and perhaps play a little first base. So I think, again, you're looking at depth there, and Dan Johnson, maybe this Juan Francisco, who hit 13 home runs last year with the Brewers, and they released him this spring. I think he's a definite candidate, both of them are, maybe to come up if Adam can't play over the next few days. It leads to a trip on the DL. But for the infield, I think you have to keep Jonathan Diaz. You have to look at Munenori Kawasaki. When Reyes comes back on Friday, you like Ryan Goins at second base because now Ryan's hit safely in the last three games. He's hitting the ball hard, and he's kind of back where he was last year in those 8 and 9 game hitting streaks.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you want as your backup infielder? I don't think they need a fifth outfielder. I think Moises Sierra is your fourth outfielder. So for me, it probably would be a coin flip between Diaz and Kawasaki. I'm not quite sure how they would go, but a left-handed hitter on the bench and someone who's got the body of work of Kawasaki, he might get the nod.
Yeah, Jerry Howarth joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ari Dickey scheduled to get the start for the Jays tonight. There's a couple of schools of thought about pitching in cold weather. I mean, sort of for a knuckleball pitcher, the general train of thought is that the colder the temperature, the denser the air, the less the spin on the knuckleball. In other words, cold weather can be an asset for a for a starting pitcher if he's throwing a knuckleball. The knuckleball. I don't know what. I don't know if you've talked to RA about it or you can remember anything he said in the past about pitching in cold weather. Do you have any sense of whether it's that big an issue for him, a plus or a minus?
I don't, but I remember Tom Candiotti with the knuckleball with the Blue Jays. He said the one situation he did not like was cold weather. And so I don't know if that's an issue for RA or not. When he won the Cy Young Award a couple of years ago, he was pitching basically outdoors the whole season, including April, and that gets pretty chilly as well, but not as bad, I don't think, as we've seen here this April and this last winter as well. So I don't know, but I do know that when you're 1-5 and your ERA is over 5 with 3 indoor starts, and that's been his element, his most favorite element, then perhaps a change is going to be good for him. But cold weather, if Brandon Morrow couldn't get a feel for a certain pitch, a slider, maybe a curveball or a changeup, I'm not quite sure what RA's situation is with a field pitch for his one pitch, and that's the knuckleball. But I think time will tell, too, because it's tough on everybody, especially the hitters. So not a good situation, but I think RA's probably looking forward to a little bit of a change, too, from where he's been indoors, where he wasn't that successful in 2 of those 3 starts.
Before we let you go, Jerry, what do you make of the newspapers are full today of Jay Happ, you know, obviously not very pleased to be in the bullpen as opposed to the rotation. And again, in fairness to Jay Happ, I'm going to point out, I mean, Jay Happ gets asked a question and Jay Happ gives an answer. And, you know, a lot of the times it has to be put in context. What's your read on Jay Happ's situation with this team? Because he certainly does seem to be unhappy. Not to, a bad pun.
My read on Jay Happ is this. It's a performance-oriented game. When your ERA in your career is over 4.5, and you've pitched to a higher ERA with the Blue Jays in whatever role you're in, go do it. Mm-hmm. And right now there are 5 pretty good starters in that rotation. When you count Drew Hutchison and where he's been and Dustin McGowan where he's been, there's plenty of room later on. You don't go through a season with 5 starters. But, Jay, go out and pitch. And instead of throwing 90 pitches in AAA over 4 1/3 innings, which he just did in his rehab assignment, throw 90 pitches over 7 innings here and then see what those questions are and how you're going to answer them. So not that it's an excuse, but Jay Happ has to forget where he's been and just go out and pitch. And if you're effective, they'll find a place for you. And if you're not, then you're going to end up where you are. And he's had some back issues, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, the bottom line is he hasn't pitched that effectively as a Blue Jay. And until he does, he's bound to accept the role that he has. Unhappily, yes. But right now, he's not a starter as good as the starters that they have.
Jerry, it's good of you to do this. Thanks so much. Hopefully, we'll have baseball tonight. And, if we do, stay warm.
I will. Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. That is Jerry Howarth. He is the voice of the Blue Jays. So, again, here's a situation. Just taking a look at the Minneapolis weather. It's currently, with the wind chills, currently 23 degrees Fahrenheit in Minneapolis. There is a winter storm warning to the north of the city. Now, you know that Jerry Howarth just finished telling you that there's blue sky and it's dry in the city of Minneapolis. It's going to be cold tonight. Best case scenario is they're playing ball tonight and it's cold. And we'll have Mike Wilner with the pregame show at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can catch the game on Sportsnet Ontario. I believe it's Sportsnet Ontario. Do we have it, all the Sportsnet channels tonight for the Jays game? Yeah, we'll get that information for you. We do. All the Jays channels tonight for the Jays and Twins. First pitch at 8:10. The Jays going for their second win. R.A. Dickey against Mike Pelfrey for the Minnesota Twins. That's a situation. If the game is banged tonight, for whatever reason, the teams will play a doubleheader tomorrow, an afternoon and evening doubleheader tomorrow. So that's the plan right now. The Jays have already been told that. If there's no game tonight, there will be a doubleheader tomorrow. And one would assume that it would be the similar pitching matchup for with R.A. Dickey against Mike Pelfrey. So the Jays won 9-3 last night. Brett Laurie hit a grand slam. The offense continuing to come alive. And I want to ask you, you know, we talked a little bit about this the other day about Jonathan Diaz. And, you know, to me, Jonathan Diaz is the next John McDonald. But Jose Reyes is due back on Friday in Cleveland. Even if Adam Lind goes on the DL, with his back injury. As Jerry said, the chances are that somebody like Dan Johnson or Juan Francisco would be called up to take his place, because whoever replaces Adam Lind has to be able to play a little bit of first base in addition to DHing. So let's leave aside Adam Lind for now. Focus on Jose Reyes. Jose Reyes comes back to the Jays on Friday. Who would you send out? You've got Ryan Goins, who, as Jerry said, started to make hard contact the last three games. Jonathan Diaz, who's done absolutely everything the Jays have asked of him and more, and is frankly the second best shortstop of the group behind Jose Reyes, and defensively he may not be that far behind Jose Reyes, or Munenori Kawasaki, who's everybody's favorite left-handed hitter. Who would be the player that you would send down in the event of Jose Reyes returning? Would it be Munenori Kawasaki or Jonathan Diaz? There are people out there who would probably send Ryan Goins down as well. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. Eddie in Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good, man.
You know what? For me, this is sort of a two-way street between where they should go. I mean, as far as the shortstop position goes, I want to talk about that first. When Reyes comes back, I think Diaz will get, you know, sent down. I mean, yeah, I like him, but you know what? He hasn't played much in the last, what, 2-3 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, and last night you saw Kawasaki making something happen, which was, you know, the difference in that win when they were down 2-0.
I don't know if it was the... I don't know, I wouldn't say it was the difference. I wouldn't say Munenori Kawasaki was the difference last night.
Well, to me, I thought it did, because Phil Hughes really was making, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, a little bit mad, you know, like giving them pitches that they weren't hitting and they weren't doing well, and then they needed something, right, to get them going. And I thought the double that he got really went in their favor. So I think from that side, Diaz should get sent down. As far as second base goes, if they feel Goins still needs more time to develop, you know, hitting-wise, then maybe you should platoon Kawasaki and Diaz at second base.
See, here's the thing. I mean, if it's me, I keep Diaz up and I send Kawasaki down. But I understand what Jerry's saying. Kawasaki is a left-handed bat. The strength of this team in the early season, part of it has been the defense. And I don't want to take away one of the guys who's contributed defensively. You've already seen Meister's Tourist go down. I don't want to take one of the other defensive contributors and replace him with a guy. Yeah, Munenori Kawasaki is a better offensive player than Jonathan Diaz, but he is nowhere near the infielder Jonathan Diaz is. And with this pitching staff, the ball's going to be in play a hell of a lot. And I want Jonathan Diaz's defense in there. Now, having said that, I think you can read in Jerry Hauer's voice, the indication is that Jonathan Diaz would be sent down. They can't send, and Eddie, thanks for the call, they can't send Ryan Goins down, because you've spent all winter and all spring training telling everybody he's your second baseman. Now, we can have a debate about Stephen Drew. We can have a debate about whether or not Ryan Goins can be an everyday second baseman on a championship team or in a contending team or on a playoff team. We can have that debate. But the fact is, you don't send him down now. You've made your bed with Ryan Goins. You've got to sleep in it. So to me, it comes down to Kawasaki or Diaz. And I got to keep Diaz up here because he's a better defender. I want to maximize my defense. And it's true, Kawasaki does give you good at bat. But I want to maximize my defense with Jonathan Diaz. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Use the hashtag Blair Show if you want to join the conversation on social media. Jose Reyes is due back on Friday. Who do you send down? Who do you send out? Bearing in mind, you're probably going to have to make another move as well for Adam Lind if his back injury, his lower back injury, is as severe as a lot of people think it is. Chest Rockwell writes in, send down Sierra. Mando 5000. I would send down Kawasaki and give Johnny Mac 2.0 Diaz a shot. Let him get more experience in the bigs. DJ Brooks, if the defense is working, Goins has to stay, doesn't he? Diaz can play anywhere. Kawasaki's the odd man out. Gruber's mullet, send down Rogers, option be damned. Yeah, remember we spent all that time worrying about whether Jeremy Jeffress was going to get snapped up? Well, nobody bothered picking him up. So maybe that's what you do. Do you hang on to that extra guy? Do you go the seven-man bullpen? I don't think you do that. If you're gonna go the seven-man bullpen, to me, you've got to bring Eric Kratz up here and you got to go with three catchers. Dan in Mississauga, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff, first-time caller, long-time listener. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome and thank you.
Munenori Kawasaki's got to go back down. Plain and simple, I mean, we don't have much of a sample size. One good at-bat. Who really cares? I mean, last year he wasn't a superstar. We just loved him because he was fun to watch.
Yeah, not much else was going positive.
No, not really. The bat was not that great. I don't think he's arguably that much better of a batter than Diaz is.
Yeah, and well, I think he, here's the thing. I think he can work a pitcher more than Diaz can, but Diaz might be able to be that guy. And I'd rather, he's so much better defensively. He's not even in the same stratosphere. I would rather see Jonathan Diaz up here and see if he can turn into that type of a Kawasaki hitter, a guy who can work the count. To me, it's not that difficult a decision. Again, I understand Jerry's argument about Kawasaki, and you know, yeah, look, the guy started a rally last night, but this is a pitching staff that's going to have the ball and play an awful lot. I have to maximize my defense. Marshall and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Who goes down when Jose Reyes comes back?
Why, Jeff? Well, for me, it has to be Diaz because notwithstanding what you're saying, and I understand it for sure, believe me, I wouldn't want to rely on any one of these three guys going forward to carry the team. But when Reyes comes back, I want him playing 100% of the innings, and he is going to play 100% of the innings. So even if Diaz is your better defensive option, he's not going to get on the field.
Here's the thing that would concern me about that.
Unless Diaz can play the right side, which is something I don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't know. He might be able to play second base, but I mean,
he's a good looking player. I really like all three of those guys. I like
right.
what each of them bring, but I think he's the most redundant when Reyes comes.
Well, that's the other way to look at it, and that is a valid point. What are you keeping that guy for? Are you keeping that player for defense? Well, you're not going to play defense for Jose Reyes in late innings. That's very true. You're probably keeping that guy for offense. But again, I keep getting back to this. He's such a good defender that I want to see if he can become that guy. If he can become Munenori Kawasaki, you know the defense is better.
I'll tell you what. I think the defense, I can boil down the improvement and the difference from between the last year's team and this year's team exactly to the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Not the hitting, not even the pitching. The pitching is still getting hit hard.
Except the bullpen's good.
To knock those balls down.
Yeah.
If Torres is playing third base instead of Lurie, there's a lot more doubles down the line this season than we've seen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the call. Look, and I truly believe this. I think I'm not going to say that defense is on par with the bullpen as far as being this team's strength. But it's, boy, you've got to really be a glass half empty guy to look at the Jays defense and not look at it as a real positive. Starting with Brett Lurie and Deonner Navarro. Brian in Cambridge, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jose Reyes comes back. He'll be playing in Cleveland. It's going to be probably cold there. Who do you send down?
Well, Jeff, different school of thought here for you. I think Reyes is no doubt the most valuable of all the guys you're talking about. But I'd like to propose the idea of maybe keeping Reyes down for another week or 10 days, letting him continue his rehab assignment, letting his hamstring continue to get stronger, letting the weather continue to warm up, and ride the guys that you currently have for another week or so, and then reevaluate it.
Here's the thing with Jose Reyes. I made this point when they took him to Montreal. I thought it was a stupid decision. I think you leave him in Florida. You let that hamstring heal until it's totally ready to go. I think this is a little different case, though. He has been down in Florida. He has been playing. If he's capable of playing back-to-back games in extended spring and minor league camp, and I believe he's playing a third game in as many days today, then I think you bring him up. But, again, you're going to Cleveland. Don't know what the weather's going to be like. It's probably not going to be balmy. So I don't know. Maybe if you're the Jays, you err on the side of caution initially. You keep Jonathan Diaz up. You send Munenori Kawasaki down, and then you see where it goes from there. And if Jose Reyes is fine and there's no issues with him defensively, then maybe you make another move. But I do see both points of the argument. Jonathan Diaz's strength is as a defensive player. He's not going to be on the field with Jose Reyes out there. I guess you could have Reyes out there with him at second base instead of Ryan Goins, but Goins is your everyday guy. You've committed to Ryan Goins. He's hitting the ball harder in the past three games. I don't think, you know, you haven't signed Steven Drew. You didn't make a trade. Well, you tried to trade for Ian Kinsler. It didn't work out. But after that, you didn't make a trade because you decided you'd stick with this guy. I don't think you can go back on Ryan Goins right now. So I can see where you are saying that extra infielder, does it have to be a defensive player? Does it have to tilt more towards an offensive player? If it's more towards an offensive player, probably you would go with Kawasaki. Hugh and Guelph, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Munenori Kawasaki, Jonathan Diaz. I'm not going to even put Goins in the conversation because I don't think they're going to send him down. But who goes down when Jose Reyes comes back on Friday?
Personally, I'd send Goins down. I think that we're splitting hairs. We're talking about average baseball players at best with major deficiencies. The only one thing that Kawasaki has over the other ones is he is kind of a catalyst. Whenever he's been inserted in the lineup, that team has more spark, it has more chemistry, it has more jump.
Now, it doesn't have more chemistry. How does it have more chemistry?
Well, you underestimate the chemistry factor.
No, I don't. It's never been proven. Chemistry.
What?
How do you know what they're happy?
You remember last year when the Jays went on, what was it, 9 or 10 games?
Right.
Game streak?
He played really well.
Right.
He played really well.
Last night again. He's a catalyst again.
He had a real good at bat.
This team is a very. It almost seems like a very unemotional team.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can't get into that. You really can't expect me to say that Munenori or believe that Munenori Kawasaki makes them a better team because he makes them feel better about themselves. This isn't hockey. It's baseball. You do it every day. I mean, please, chemistry. He was here when they sucked last year, too, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't Munenori Kawasaki here last year when people were hammering on the Blue Jays for all those dugout celebrations they'd have? Remember, Munenori Kawasaki was here when people were talking about the clubhouse, you know, it just seemed kind of flat. Yeah, look, Munenori Kawasaki played well during that winning streak last year. He played well. All the other stuff, you know, the backflips and all that, the funny interviews, that's great. Doesn't mean jack you know what if you don't play well in the field. You know, with all due respect to people, you're looking at Munenori Kawasaki as if he's some sort of fourth line winger who's going to ignite your hockey team. It's not going to work. You're not going to hit that night's starting pitcher fastball. You're not going to have a better chance of hitting it because you've got happy Munenori Kawasaki in the dugout. Come on. John in Toronto, you're in Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I like Kawasaki as much as anybody, but the problem is that he's a backup. And when you are out there in the field and you have someone at third base, which he cannot play, or at shortstop, which he doesn't have a strong enough arm on, that means he only can back up one position, second base, maybe first. His arm is not strong enough to play the other positions. And one of the strengths of this year's team that I'm seeing a lot of, and which I've always said, is defense. When you have ground ball pitchers like Dickey and Burley, helps you win a lot of games. And for the other guys, it means that they don't have to nibble and strike everybody out. They can just throw it in there, and the defense will help them. Diaz can play defense well. And when someone goes down or you pinch hit for someone like a Goins, I want the guy in there that's the best defender. I don't want the guy in there that, you know, yeah, can he pinch hit? But are you going to pinch hit him over an Eric Kratz or over a Moises Sierra? I mean, Kawasaki, not Diaz.
It's
just going to, you know, you want the guy in there that's the best defender. Who are you going to pinch hit for? Probably Goins. I want the best defensive player there. And he can back up the other positions more than adequately, which Kawasaki cannot do. Simple. He's a backup. That's all he is.
Yeah, I, no, I listen to you, man. I believe I'm there with you. And there seems to be, there's this almost this mystical attachment to Munenori Kawasaki on the part of people. And the only reason I can see keeping Kawasaki over Diaz is because with Jose Reyes in the lineup, you're not going to be playing, you're not ever going to be playing defense for him unless he gets hurt, in which case that's a totally different situation. So you're not pinch hitting for him. You're not going to be playing defense for him. So that extra infielder has to be a little bit of an offensive guy. That's the only reason I could see it. But I mean, if you're asking me right now, Jonathan Diaz in the left hand, Munenori Kawasaki in the right hand, who would I rather have in my roster? I'd rather have Jonathan Diaz. And I also want to see if Jonathan Diaz can turn into that player. You know, with all due respect to people who talk about how great Munenori Kawasaki was for chemistry, this team's chemistry, if you want to call it that, it's been pretty good this year. And Munenori Kawasaki wasn't around. Jonathan Diaz is the guy who's made some good plays here. Jonathan Diaz is the guy who's been around for this better than expected start. So if you're using the argument you used last year about Munenori Kawasaki, in some ways you can transfer it to Jonathan Diaz. I'm just throwing it out there. If you're using the chemistry argument, there's every indication that Jonathan Diaz can be quote unquote good for chemistry as much as Munenori Kawasaki. We'll deal with this in Baseball Central with Kevin Barker, which is just around the corner. Got to mention, by the way, that Hockey Central's on location in Tampa, so the boys will get you set for the Tampa-Montreal playoff series, which starts tonight. Speaking of playoffs, the Toronto Raptors are in New York. They play the Knicks. We know the Raps are in the playoffs. We don't know who they'll be facing in the first round. Matt Devlin is the play-by-play voice of the Raptors in Sportsnet. He'll join us. We'll get you set for that last Raptors regular season game. We'll look at the matchups. Who would Matt Devlin like to see the Raptors have? All I know is this. I don't want any part of the Chicago Bulls. I don't want any part of Charlotte. I'll take anybody else. That includes Brooklyn. We'll talk to Matt Devlin about that in a few minutes.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
If we're playing Drake, it must only mean one thing. We are talking about the playoff-bound Toronto Raptors. Or Dylan's working the control board. Or Kentucky basketball. Yeah, what a front runner he is, eh? Seriously, man. You think Drake would be showing his face around here if the Raps were in, like, dead last? Anyhow. The Toronto Raptors playing the New York Knickerbockers tonight. It'll be the last game of the regular season. And, well, we await to see who the first round opponent is. I mean, I've got my own thoughts on it. I've got my own thoughts on who I would like to see the Raptors face. And I'm not as afraid of Brooklyn as a lot of people are. I'm really not. I'd take Brooklyn before Charlotte. Yeah, that's just my opinion. I want no piece, obviously, like everybody else. I want no piece of Chicago. I don't want any piece of Chicago. I want to tell you what, I would rather play the Pacers than the Bulls in the playoffs. I'd much rather play the Pacers than the Bulls. But let's see what Matt Devlin, who is the play-by-play voice of the Raptors on Sportsnet, let's see what he thinks about my feelings in this situation. Matt Devlin joined us. So, Mr. Devlin, last game of the regular season, playoffs coming up.
Yes.
Who do the Raptors, I mean, deep down, if you surveyed all the Raptors, gave them total anonymity?
I think Washington.
Is who they'd want to play.
Yeah, I think Washington is the first-round matchup that I think, you know, is in the books right now. But as you well know, could certainly change after tonight. Brooklyn's lost 3 of 4. There's a theory out there that, you know, Brooklyn, after losing last night, you know, they had won 6 of 7 and now 3 of 4 as they rest players, that quite possibly they're trying to avoid Chicago in that first-round matchup. And then obviously try to get the Toronto Raptors. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's a tricky game to play.
Sure.
When you try to line yourself up, you know, from a first round standpoint to a second round, you know, because you may see a team that you don't want to see in the first round, but then you see a team that you want to see in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting to see how all this plays out. Washington can move up to 5th. Washington wins tonight in Cleveland and then Brooklyn if Washington wins tonight in Boston and then Brooklyn loses in Cleveland, they will flip-flop.
You know, as I look at the potential matchups, or just look at the playoffs, I don't know why. Maybe it's kind of a trendy pick. I don't know, but I don't want any of the Bobcats if I'm the Raptors. You know, that concerns me as much as the Nets do.
Yeah, well, I think the reason why a lot of people will look at Charlotte and say, hey, you'll give them a shot as far as, you know, the Raptors going in to the postseason against them is based upon the fact that that is a team that does not have much playoff experience. And I think the biggest fear, or one of the biggest fears with a Brooklyn-Chicago meeting, certainly, is the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
The playoff whistle. And when you have Brooklyn that has all those veterans, you know, to me that is something, you know, that you look around, they've been there before, they've done it before, and you say, okay, you know, can we get that playoff whistle against that team? And then you look at from a matchup half court standpoint, they, I think, could be extremely difficult. So knowing that, I think that you look at Charlotte, and yes, Charlotte, for whatever reason, is one of those tough matchups for the Toronto Raptors. But I think some of it has been based upon the fact that they've looked at them, I think, lightly during the regular season, unfortunately. And one of them, if you go back to last season, you know, was a blown call by Ed Molloy at the end of the game. And that obviously could have altered, you know, their future success against Charlotte, but certainly it altered that one game.
Explain the playoff whistle to me. I mean, I know what you're getting at, and I know a lot of our listeners will as well, but maybe for the uninitiated, for those who haven't necessarily seen NBA officiating up close, explain the playoff whistle.
Right. I think, you know, most of the times when you get into the playoffs, you know, they're not going to get into a situation where they want calls affecting outcomes of games. I really believe that officiating the NBA is the hardest league to officiate because of all the different variables. You know, number one is, you know, size. Shaquille O'Neal, when he was on the inside, when he's getting hacked by somebody that's 6'5", but yet, you know, he bumps into somebody 6'5", and they fall over. I mean, it is extremely difficult to call an NBA game because there is contact on every play. And in the postseason, there is, without question, you know, contact on every play. And when you look at a team like Brooklyn, you know, they're going to get after you. And you look over there and you have Paul Pierce and you have Kevin Garnett, who have, you know, certainly resumes that are going to be headed to the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, given the fact that it's going to be an environment in which it's going to be extremely physical, you know, that's ultimately playoff, you know, whistle. It's different, you know. They want players, I think, you know, to dictate the outcome of games. They're not going to, you know, at the end of a game, you know, shot goes up. They're not necessarily going to blow, you know, the whistle on a shot because they, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, that's not a part of it, you know? You with me on that?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, the only thing, I just don't trust. Here's the thing. I get it because I don't, and, you know, this is just my opinion. I don't trust NBA officials. You're right. I think it's a hard game to call. I think there's a lot of factors. There's a lot of relationships and reputation involved in calls in the NBA, and that's just the way the game is.
Yeah, but I think that's in every sport. I think the difference. Yeah,
that's true. Strike zones.
Look at the strike zone.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in New York. I'm listening to local radio, and then, you know, obviously have on, you know, ESPN here, just, you know, seeing what they're talking about, and, you know, they're talking about, you know, the strike zone and, you know, whether or not the high strike is called. You know, the thing that always gets me about baseball is umpires saying, my strike zone. That's not in my strike zone. Well, wait a minute. It's in the book.
Yep.
The book's dictates what a strike zone is.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that we're getting off now on a completely different thing. But, you know, I do believe that when you get into the playoffs, the officiating in the NBA to me is the hardest based upon the bodies, the factors, the proximity of the crowd to, you know, the floor, all the different things that go into it. And, you know, when you go up against a team like Brooklyn, look, it's going to be physical. Dwayne Casey's talked about the physicality of it for his team. You know, you, from a mental standpoint, if you're DeMar DeRozan, you have to, when Saturday or Sunday comes and you enter your first postseason game, you're going to have to understand that when you put the ball on the floor and you're going to the rim, that there's going to be contact. There may not be a call, but you got to just keep doing it.
Hey, Matt, very quick. I was just going to say very quickly in about 30 seconds here. What does Dwayne Casey do tonight as far as the lineup goes? Does he rest guys, or do you have your regular team out there?
Well, I don't have a feel for it right now, but knowing Dwayne, I would say that he's always one that does not like to mess with the basketball gods. But you do have to rest some guys, I think, and get ready for this weekend. It's one of those, you know, you're kind of up in the air. It's going to be interesting to see.
Matt, it was good of you to do this. Enjoy New York. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'm really looking forward to the playoffs. It's going to be a hoot. This is a tremendous story, and we're lucky to be I'm lucky to be in the periphery of it. You guys are real lucky to be right in it.
Well, we are, and it's going to be great. And as my good friend Hubie Brown said, reputations are made or broken in the playoffs, and that's what's great about it.
Absolutely. Take care, Matt. That is Matt Devlin. He is the play-by-play voice of the Raptors on Sportsnet. Again, Raptors don't know their first-round opponent. Do you know the home court advantage will start Saturday or Sunday? We'll know the identity of their opponent tonight. Is the end of the NBA regular season. The Raps are in New York, and as Matt said, we have no idea how Dwayne Casey's going to play this. You don't want to, you know, thumb your nose at the playoff gods, at the basketball gods, but at the same time, you want to make sure you've got guys rested and ready to go for the playoffs. And we'll talk a lot of Raps tomorrow once we know the identity of their playoff opponent. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show. Baseball Central's next. Kevin Barker's going to join me. Going to talk to Kevin Barker about what he would do with Jose Reyes coming back. Talk a little bit more about Brandon Morrow. Going to talk about Joey Votto. Joey Votto appears to have regained his power stroke. We'll talk about that. Baseball Central in just a few seconds, everybody.